governments. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy of resistance. We have found this joy in resistance. For those who gain by keeping women down, we say your numbers up, don't underestimate our persistence. Keeping organized together, we have come a long distance. Joy, joy of resistance. Sisters of the joy of resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
And you're on, Fran.
Hello, testing 1, 2, 3. Testing
Fran,
1, 2, 3.
You are on the air.
Okay, speakers, stereo, mic, same as system, select. I don't understand this. Alrighty.
Fran, you're on, Fran.
You know, I don't understand this. Mute. Michael, I cannot hear you.
Thank you.
WBAI New York. Coming up next, Joy of Resistance with Fran Luck.
Joy of Resistance. We're sisters of the Joy of Resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy of Resistance. We have found the joy in resistance. For those who gain by keeping women down, we say your numbers up, don't underestimate our persistence. Joy of Resistance. We have found the joy in resistance. We're keeping organized together. We have come a long distance. Joy, joy of resistance. Sisters of the joy of resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
And good morning. This is the Joy of Resistance Multicultural Feminist Radio at WVAI. My name is Fran Luck. Every week, we bring you news from the front lines of the feminist struggle that's going on all over the world. We've been focusing a lot on this country, where so much is happening under this Trump administration that affects women. We are going to have a pretty exciting show for you today, with up-to-the-minute reports on two breaking issues. In our first segment, we're going to be speaking with the Senior Director of Federal Government Relations of the National Women's Law Center, which has been examining this gigantic, quote, reconciliation budgetary bill, which has been called the Big Beautiful Bill by the Trump administration and is being called the Big Ugly Bill by Democrats and just about everybody else. We are going to be speaking with Maribel Ramos about what is in this bill. It's 1,116 pages of, oh my goodness, cutbacks, defunding, Medicaid, possibly Medicare, most likely Medicare if it passes in its form that it is in right now, and on and on and on. And we're going to be particularly looking at it through the lens of how it affects women and families. That is our first segment. In our second segment, we're going to be talking with Lulu Freestadt, who is the founder and director of a group called Smart Elections, and they have a suit going that they have lodged against Rockland County on the basis of the senatorial and the presidential races in Rockland County not being valid in their outcomes. And that has implications for the rest of the country, certainly in terms of the 2024 presidential race. So we're going to be speaking with Lulu Freestadt about that suit and its implications. In the meantime, we're going to start the program by going to our usual feminist news segment. So stay tuned for that. And following the loss of national abortion rights under Supreme Court ruling Roe versus Wade in 2022, many states have enacted abortion bans. Many have also enshrined abortion rights in their constitutions. In July 2022, the Biden administration created guidance under the Department of Health and Human Services to permit abortions in states with bans when there was a danger to the health or life of the mother when she was in a hospital or emergency room. On Tuesday, Trump rescinded that guidance President Biden had used under federal law to require hospitals to stabilize patients in need of emergency care, including providing an abortion. The federal law is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, otherwise known as EMTALA, which passed in 1986. Emergency medical conditions included, but were not limited to, ectopic pregnancy, complications of pregnancy loss, or emergent hypertensive disorders. Health and Human Services and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services issued a letter on Tuesday rescinding the guidance, saying, quote, they do not reflect the policy of this administration, close quote. The ACLU has said that rescinding the guidance does not change hospitals' legal obligation under EMTALA to provide life-saving abortion care. And when we discuss the big budget bill in the program, you will hear that that is also included in that budgetary bill. Okay. A Trump-appointed federal judge in Louisiana has struck down regulations that require most U.S. employers to provide their employees with time off and other accommodations for abortions. Abortions are one of many pregnancy-related medical conditions covered under the Pregnant Workers Fairness, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, which passed in December of 2022 with the goal of improving the rights of pregnant women. During the Biden administration, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission determined it would include accommodations for abortion among the, quote, reasonable accommodations, close quote, covered in their regulations on how to implement the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. Conservative organizations filed lawsuits seeking to overturn the EEOC ruling. The Trump-appointed Louisiana judge, David Joseph, overturned the EEOC ruling by backing the lawsuit filed in his court by the Attorneys General of Louisiana and Mississippi, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Catholic University, and two Catholic dioceses. Joseph said he based his decision on the alleged lack of Congress specifically mentioning abortion in the text of the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. In the wake of the Dobbs Supreme Court decision, which outlawed federal abortion, which on a federal level, abortion on the federal level, Louisiana enacted a near total ban of abortion with exceptions only to save the pregnant woman's life or if the fetus is not expected to survive the pregnancy. And we know, of course, that doctors are very loath to say an abortion is needed, and few women have died, and many have been near death because of the reluctance of doctors to prescribe that life-saving abortion. That is how that worked out. Now we're going to switch to another topic. At last night's New York City mayoral debate, Andrew Cuomo, a former New York State governor who is now running for mayor of New York City, ducked repeated questions about his resignation as governor in 2021 after 13 women who had worked with him had accused him of sexual harassment. And in last night's debate, he denied that he had done anything wrong. Former top aide Lindsay Boylan was his first accuser in 2021, stating that the governor had gone, quote, out of his way to touch her lower back, arms, and legs, and had kissed her during one-on-one meeting, saying the governor had sexually harassed her for years. Quote, I could never anticipate what to expect. Would I be grilled on my work, which was very good, or harassed about my looks, or would it be both at the same time? Close quote. Boylan claimed the governor's pervasive harassment was not limited to her. Quote, Governor Andrew Cuomo has created a culture within his administration where sexual harassment and bullying is so pervasive that it is not only condoned but expected, Boylan wrote. He used intimidation to silence his critics, and if you dare to speak up, you would face consequences, close quote. Boylan was then soon joined by 12 other former Cuomo administration staffers who had similar stories to tell. New York State Attorney General Letitia James had conducted an extensive investigation of the charges at that time, employing a team of expert lawyers and investigators, and corroborated the testimonies of 11 of the former female staffers with similar stories. James' office had released a report that said, quote, specifically, we find that the governor sexually harassed a number of current and former New York State employees by, among other things, engaging in unwelcome and non-consensual touching, as well as making numerous offensive comments of a suggestive and sexual nature that created a hostile work environment for women. Our investigation revealed that the governor's sexually harassing behavior was not limited to members of his own staff, but extended to other state employees, including a state trooper and his protective detail, and a number of other public servants. We also conclude that the executive chamber's culture, one filled with fear and intimidation, while at the same time normalizing the government's frequent flirtations and gender-based comments, contributed to the conditions that allowed the sexual harassment to occur and to persist. At last night's debate, when Cuomo was asked about these allegations, he gave more details on a former question and did not respond to the question about sexual harassment. A second attempt at that question came later in the debate, and Cuomo answered that, quote, five DAs found the charges unsubstantiated, and he said the entire thing was a political hit job. He said, if I ever offended anyone, I'm sorry, and said he had said that numerous times. And he had said earlier in the day, yesterday, that he had moved on because there were much more important issues to discuss. Sexual harassment is undergone by about one-third of working women, or rather I should say that one-third of working women at some times during their working lives lose jobs, walk out of jobs because they cannot get attention paid to the sexual harassment that is making their lives miserable on those jobs. And that is some of the feminist news for this week. The news tonight was written and compiled by myself, Fran Luck, by Dina Leibowitz, and by Pete Dolak, and read by myself, Fran Luck. When we return after this news break, we are going to be speaking with Marbo Ramos about what is in that 1,116-page bill passed in the middle of the night last week that is going to change the face of this country in many ways. So please stay tuned for that. Thank you. All right. And we have on the line Marbo Ramos. Good morning, Marbo.
Good morning, Fran. How are you? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. If you speak up just a little bit, that'll be good. Can you hear me all right?
I can. Is this better?
That is better. And
okay,
can you hear me? Because we had a little bit of connection problems this morning.
Okay.
So I am really, really glad you could be here. You are working, of course, with the National Women's Law Center, in which you have a very important job. You are the senior director of federal government relations of the National Women's Law Center, and the National Women's Law Center has been examining this huge reconciliation budgetary bill, and you are going to be giving us a report on just what's in it, because it's so big that most of us don't know. And, of course, it covers many, many areas, but we are going to be focusing on those parts of it that relate to the lives of women and girls and families this morning. Okay, so we're going to start by asking you to, let's see, why don't we just go into what are some of the main features of this bill that affect women and girls that our audience should know about?
Yes. Well, again, thank you, Fran, for the opportunity this morning. Appreciate your time and to hear from the National Women's Law Center. So I guess quickly, for those who may not be familiar with the process, the Republicans are using what's called reconciliation, which is a process that they're using to advance some of Trump's priorities that Democrats oppose. And don't get me wrong, this reconciliation has been used by both parties. Trump used this to pass the 2017 Trump tax cuts. Some examples where Democrats have actually used this reconciliation process was the key pieces of the Affordable Care Act, the American Rescue Plan Act, and the Inflation Reduction Act. Just quickly, in the Senate, in order to get most bills passed, as we all know, requires a supermajority of the votes, which means 60 out of 100 senators. However, the budget reconciliation process does allow senators to expedite certain pieces of legislation just with a simple majority, so a vote of 51 votes. And it's a way for the majority in power to advance their priorities. So obviously Republicans right now are in power of both the House and the Senate. So they're using this reconciliation process to pass this horrible Trump Republican budget bill. There are strict rules around using reconciliation. You know, they must affect the federal budget, so they can't just merely be incidental to policy changes. They have to affect the budget in some way. It has to be used to change most mandatory spending, except for Social Security. This does not include discretionary spending, which is the portion of the federal budget.
Now, Rebel, let me interrupt for a second because we are very short on time because we had some issues earlier.
Yes.
Let me ask you to jump. I mean, this is obviously a huge amount of obstacles this bill has to overcome, although, you know, to actually get passed in the Senate, which we'll mention. But let's talk about what is being proposed in that bill. What are its worst features for women?
Sure. So as you all probably have heard, the Trump Republican budget bill is the largest transfer of wealth from everyday people to the billionaire class in our country's history. The bill makes drastic cuts to programs that are vital to women and families, like Medicaid and food assistance, SNAP, as well as education programs. And that's to name a few. This is all to pay for. So all these cuts are going to pay for more tax breaks for billionaires and mega corporations. So how this does, some of the major changes in the Medicaid program, one in five Americans who receive their health insurance through Medicaid, which includes kids, moms, seniors, and people with disabilities, this will make cuts to these programs that these folks rely on. One of the drastic changes in the bill is makes to Medicaid is by imposing these horrific work reporting requirements for those who enroll in the Medicaid expansion program. So this has nothing to do with work. It's simply a way for people, for Republicans, to kick eligible people off of Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So the majority of working age Medicaid recipients are already in the workforce. Adding these additional work requirements will result in higher poverty rates, mostly more costly care for people, poor health outcomes, and exacerbated healthcare deserts. Again, this bill will rob Americans of their health care so that billionaires can get another tax break. Right. I also mentioned cuts to SNAP, to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is a program that helps millions of women and children afford groceries and stay out of poverty. So these cuts will put 6 million adults at risk of losing SNAP benefits, as well as 4 million children. The bill shifts more of the cost of providing SNAP benefits to states. So this will essentially force states to cut eligibility or also reduce services because of tight budgets. The bill also expands SNAP work requirements. As I mentioned in the Medicaid program, the work requirements in SNAP, it would raise the maximum age when work requirements apply from 54 currently to 64, and also limits states' ability to request work requirement waivers for those areas that have high unemployment rates. So these changes to the SNAP program would fundamentally change the structure of the program itself, and it undermines the ability to curb hunger during economic downturns. So I also just want to mention there are other measures that may not be getting a lot of the limelight, but are very important for women and reproductive rights. So there are provisions in the bill that makes it harder for all Americans to obtain abortion care by penalizing insurers that include abortion coverage in their plan. So this would result in pushing insurers to drop abortion coverage altogether. It limits access at a time when states have already banned the procedure. So specifically, it would bar ACA marketplace plans that cover abortion from receiving federal cost-sharing subsidies. Again, it could significantly impact states that mandate abortion coverage in all ACA plans. It would prohibit the use of these subsidies to fund health plans that cover abortion services. That's one way, and then it also, there's provisions in there that will defund Planned Parenthood. Again, these are centers that provide access to birth control, STI testing, cancer screening, preventative care for more than 2 million people annually, and a lot of rural deserts.
Yep. Let me add that Planned Parenthood is just one of many Title X clinics. Title X clinics being clinics specifically dedicated to reproductive health care, although, as in the case of Planned Parenthood, they also do cancer screenings, many other health-related issues, and sometimes they're the only medical center in a particular area. And these are all being defunded. I also want to mention that I understand that those who have to do work in order to get any sort of health care and Medicaid, and, of course, you need to be healthy to work, and most people on Medicaid are already working. Nevertheless, those people will have to report twice a month. That's once every two weeks, go through all kinds of bureaucracy. So this is pretty cool. Yeah, right? This is a plan to get people off it, obviously.
Exactly. And it's going to really obviously be harmful and hurt a lot of, rural districts, a lot of Republican districts who are voting and supporting this bill. And I think that's, a good message to get out there, that these are people who are relying on Medicaid. Maybe they don't know, or they call it something different in their state. So that's the other piece of this, right, is making sure that people understand what's in this humongous bill, and how it's going to impact them directly, their families, folks in nursing homes, seniors in nursing homes, people with disabilities. These are areas where we have a lot of folks in low-income families that are going to be impacted, who rely on essential health care and nutrition benefits. So this is all compounding on top of what's already happening under this administration with, massive firings and DOGE cuts across the board.
Right. And the dismantling of the Department of Education, which administers Title IX, that's equality of women in education, and all the other dismantlings of all these other departments, many of them impact women, and we've been covering that on our show. We are speaking with Maribel Ramos, who's the Senior Director of Federal Government Relations at the National Women's Law Center. Maribel, say a word or two about the National Women's Law Center and where people can see this excellent paper that that your organization has put out that details all of the things that you are speaking of right now.
Sure. So the Law Center, we were founded over 50 years ago. We're a legal advocacy organization that fights for gender justice, especially for those who face multiple forms of discrimination, including women of color, LGBTQI+ people, and, of course, low-income women, children, and families. We do a lot of this work through litigation, joining amicus briefs. We do this also through agency advocacy and oversight. We also do a lot of public education and campaigns. A lot of the work that we do is on our website. We do a lot of research papers, and also we have tons of information that we've put out on the impact of this bill on women, children, and families, as well as the first 100 days of the Trump administration. And also just want to highlight that all of the Trump agenda has really come from Project 2025. We also have
Project 2025, yeah.
Yep, and we have a brief on Project 2025 that we put out before, you know, earlier in the year that we have on our website as well. So if folks want to take a look at what we have out there, it's our National Women's Law Center, NWLC.org. So, you know, a big piece of what we do is also educating the public on what's going on the Hill, what's going on in this administration, and a lot of the attacks that are happening to our democracy, impacting, you know, all women and children and families.
That's such excellent work. Again, that is NWLC.org, stands for National Women's Law Center, NWLC.org. Highly recommend that people go there and check out what's happening, because they tried to pass this bill in the middle of the night. They didn't quite succeed. It took another day, but they obviously wanted to keep the bill from public scrutiny. And we have a chance now to scrutinize it. And do you have any advice about how we're going to get it derailed, if that is possible?
Yeah, so, you know, like I explained earlier, the reconciliation process is a difficult one because, you know, Republicans are in the majority in both the Senate and House, and they only need 51 votes to get the bill passed, which they have. What we are trying to do is really educate our Republican members on how this is going to impact their constituents. So slowing down the process, making changes to the bill that will make it less harmful, even though, you know, this is a horrible bill, like you said, was passed in the middle of the night, early morning, where we're hearing more members that are coming out and saying they did not have any idea what was in the bill. So that's very worrisome. We are meeting with Republican members and trying to really highlight the impact of Medicaid cuts, SNAP cuts that will have on their constituents, making sure that they are aware also of how this is going to impact state budgets, right? That's what governors care about a lot is, you know, the impact on their budgets, and this will have a huge impact. These are changes that have never been made before in both Medicaid and SNAP. So we want to make sure that folks are completely aware. I think right now what's important is for folks to share their stories. You know, if you're in districts or in a state, I would say anyone. You know, what we encourage folks to do is get out there, meet with your member. If your member is in D.C., they have district offices. You can meet with state staff. They have state offices where you can go in and talk to you and just really talk about the impact this is going to have. That's really what's going to make an impact here, I believe. I think a lot of members really are concerned about the Medicaid cuts. We're hearing a lot about that. You know, they're going to have a hard time because this does have a significant impact on the budget, on the deficit. One way to derail it is really educating the public, educating our members on how this is going to really impact real people's lives.
Yes, absolutely. And I would add, get out in the streets at all possible demonstrations and join organizations that are fighting back.
Yes, that's a great point.
Yeah. Okay, Maribel Ramos, it's been a pleasure having you. I'm sorry our time was so short. I hope you will come back. NWLC.org is the place to go to get more of this information. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Fran. Thanks.
All righty. And we are, of course, the Joy of Resistance, coming to you at WBAI at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. We exist because of your support. We are providing essential information every day, as well as, well, all kinds of in-depth, wonderful cultural programming. And we very much are asking for your continued donation so that we can keep going. The Trump administration is coming down now on public media such as NPR, and we know we are somewhere on their hit list. And we need your support. We may have suits. legal suits, have to defend ourselves in the future, please call our pledge number at 833-922-4692. 833-922-4692. Easy way to do it is 833-WBAI-NYC. Okay? And, all right. We are going to take a musical break. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with Lulu Freestadt, who is the director of Smart Elections, over a very amazing suit that is being lodged that questions the results of the 2024 elections. Nothing less than that. So please stay tuned. And here is Etta James with Suffering for Suffrage. For suffragettes, talking about the 19th Amendment, which women struggled for 75 years before we could even vote. Black people couldn't really vote until the 1960s. The vote is a struggle, and it is being hemmed in many ways by many forces. We have on the line Lulu Freistadt, who is the founder and director of Smart Elections, a group that tracks whether elections are valid and legitimate or not. Smart Elections has filed suit against Rockland County based on a statistical research they have done that indicates that the election in Rockland County, both the senatorial and presidential election, may have had flawed results. And this case is actually getting traction now. It is about to go forward. Lulu Freistadt, good morning.
Good morning, Fran. What a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for all your work.
Oh, thank you for all your work, and thank you for the compliment. Lulu, I'm afraid we are very, very short on time because we had some connectivity issues earlier in the show, which set us back by a number of minutes. So we're going to have to move swiftly to explain what your group is doing to the audience. Again, you are the founder and director of Smart Elections. Tell us what Smart Elections has been doing in terms of the 2024 elections, particularly the suit that you have launched.
I'd love to. So just to be clear, the plaintiff in the lawsuit is Smart Legislation. Smart Legislation is the action arm of Smart Elections. We're a 501c3, and there's some things that we do through our 501c3, and there's a few other things that we do through Smart Legislation. But the organization's goals are the same. We are fighting for secure, accurate, accessible, well-administered elections that are publicly verifiable. Those are really our, that's our North Star. We want elections that the public has confidence in. And one of the things that we've done over the years to try to assess whether or not the election results are accurate is that we look at them with statisticians and we run different tests on the results. We do different comparisons. And the results in 2024 are remarkably unusual. And they are coming back as statistically significant. And in addition to that, in Rockland County in particular, there is more than just statistical evidence that the results are unusual or unlikely. There is actually physical evidence, and that is because the candidate in the Senate race, Diane Sayre, she's an independent candidate, and she ran against, you know, as an independent against the Democrat and Republican for the U.S. Senate, and she was really concerned when her results came back. They seemed exceptionally low to her. No one expects an independent candidate to win. Usually they're not expecting a majority of the votes, but she thought, this is very low. I think I did better than this. And she literally just went down her block and found more people who voted for her in her district than the Rockland County Board of Elections had published in their certified results. And then she went, you know, to another district, and she found the same thing, more votes for her. People, these are people who are swearing, you know, under oath that they voted for her. So this is very serious. And in general, in these districts that she checked, she was finding about almost 50% more people saying that they voted for her than was reported in the official results. And this is very concerning, especially when you magnify this out. She only went to two districts. If you magnify that out across the entire county, you could see that the results might be extremely inaccurate. There might be something really wrong here. And so in addition to that, we did a statistical analysis, and that was in one town. She lives in Ramapo. We also looked at four other towns in Rockland County. Rockland County has five towns. And in each of the four other towns, we compared different parts of the results. We compared basically the 2020 results against the 2024 results. And what we're comparing there is called drop-off. It's a little technically complicated, but not that hard to understand. We're basically comparing the difference between the presidential race and the down ballot race for the same party. Like, you know, if you expect your president, if you go in and you vote for the president in one party, often you're going to vote for the, you know, the senator or the congress people for the same party. People are fairly loyal. And so we looked at that difference. How often did people vote for the president but not vote for the down ballot race of the same party? And what we found there was a huge, huge irregularity. These are big numbers in the sense that the difference between the 2020 results and the 2024 results came back
statistically significant. And I'm going to give you a p-value. Most people don't understand p-values. P-value is a probability value. That means the likelihood. You're really measuring the likelihood. And the lower the number, the less likely that these results are expected. And the p-value in these four towns, when we compared 2020 to 2024, the p-value was zero. That's zero. That's unheard of. That means
it's really, right, improbable that this
is unlikely. Very unlikely that these results are organic natural results. They're considered statistically significant, highly unlikely, unusual, unexpected. These are the types of terms that you use when you have a p-value of zero. I've honestly never seen it.
Lulu, let me interject here. This is amazing. We've only got about 3 or 4 minutes left. Let me ask you very quickly about your suit, when it was launched, how much attention it is getting, and how people can get in touch with what you are doing.
Please support us financially. The most important thing right now, honestly, is money. We've got to pay our attorneys. We want to do depositions. The case is moving forward into discovery. This is a huge opportunity to find out not only what happened in Rockland County, but potentially in other counties around the country, because many counties have similar security protocols, similar ways of processing their ballots. Many of them use the same voting equipment. Huge, huge opportunity for us. When you go into discovery, you get to ask for things that normally you never find out. But we need to raise $100,000. Please go to smartelections.us and support us financially. We've raised almost $20,000 in the last 5 days,
unbelievable. You can find out how to do that on your website. Why don't you give us your website?
Smart Elections, S-M-A-R-T, elections.us. And just click on the donate button. There's a drop-down menu. Click on donate. And I'm going to just use my last minute, if you would. I just want to pivot to one other thing. There's a really important piece of legislation in the New York Assembly, and it's really important. It's about the voting machines coming into New York that are not reliable. And if you could please call 518-455-4466 today. That's the chair of the election law committee, and ask her to put A6287 on the agenda and pass it out of committee. That's to keep bad voting machines out of New York.
Do you have that information on your website? Because that is a lot to remember.
It's
normally
we
repeat it, but you know, we don't have time.
It's going to be at smartlegislation.org, and we'll put a link from Smart Elections to Smart Legislation.
Okay.
I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity, Fran. Thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you so much, Lulu. This is really amazing news, because it does lead to questions about the entire 2024 election. Now, I am presuming, just one quick comment, that it is kind of too late to overturn that in any way, but how do you see that progressing? What is the purpose here?
This is what we found. We found in state after state that we looked at, the election results look highly unlikely. These are patterns that are repeating in state after state after state. If, in fact, the results have not been counted correctly, then this is a constitutional violation of people's voting rights, and a federal constitutional case can be put together. And I think we're in unprecedented territory here. We've seen individual races that looked suspect to us. We have never, and I've been working on this issue for 20 years, we have never seen election results that look suspect across the entire country. And if, in fact, that is what happened, if these election results are not correct, then there are grounds for a constitutional federal case, and we have been talking to attorneys about it, and we are exploring moving forward. Again, please donate. That takes money.
And do that after you donate to WBAI, which is also on the
WBAI, of course, is a wonderful, wonderful place to support, where we find out things that we don't find out anywhere else.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Lulu Freistadt, for all of your work. This is very important, intriguing, provocative news. SmartElections.org. Have I got that right?
No. SmartElections.us. Thank you.
Okay. So sorry. But I'll repeat that. SmartElections.us. Go
thank
there.
You, thank
find
you,
out Fran. More about, find out more about this. Thank you, Lulu. Okay. We are just about out of time. We're going to go out with the song Never Turning Back. We bring you the news from the front lines, analysis, history, everything about the fight of women throughout the world, really, for full and equal human rights. We'll be back next week. Joy of Resistance signing off. Thank you so much for listening.
We're going to keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Never turning back. Never turning back. We're going to keep on walking proudly. Keep on walking proudly. Keep on walking proudly. Never turning back. Never turning back. We're gonna keep on singing loudly.
This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Keep voting, keep bad voting machines out of New York. I don't know whether you were able to get the entire number that Lulu Freistadt gave you as she was finishing the conversation with Fran Luck, the host of Joy of Resistance. Let me give you that information again. The number that she asked you to call now, in fact, if you can, is 518-455-4466. And there's an assembly bill she also gave some information about. You ready? Okay, good. A6287. And ask that on the agenda that it's passed, pass it out of committee. Ask that bill be passed, to pass it out of committee, to pass it out of committee. If you want more information about what you just heard on Joy of Resistance on this commercial-free listener-sponsored radio station, that we definitely want you to make a contribution so we can continue bringing you this kind of information. Did you hear the information that Lulu Freistadt was giving to Fran Luck about the elections, the integrity of the elections in this country, the integrity of the elections in this past election, 2024, right? Go to smartelections.us, smartelections.us, all right? Did you get all of that? I hope so. I have it written down. Maybe I'll get somebody else and they can post it where it needs to be. All right, thank you so much for tuning in. What do we got here? All right, coming up next will be an encore presentation of What's Going On. Very interesting program with Frenchie Davis from earlier today, again on this commercial-free listener-sponsored radio station, WBAI in New York. Please stay tuned.